David Greer is a legend, legendary guitar player. Every guitar player, certainly in Nashville, maybe across the United States, knows of David Greer automatically when you mention the name. Wonderful review on the back of his new album, Ways of the World, by Tommy Emmanuel, who's been a guest on this program. If you know of Tommy Emmanuel, Tommy Emmanuel's praise is non-ending for David Greer. So today, if you don't know David Greer, you're going to be introduced to him. He's going to be my guest. Talk about his brand new album, Ways of the World. Diverse album. It's got bluegrass. It has jazz. It has just whatever David wants to do. We're going to talk to David at length about his style, about this album. Very, very enjoyable visit with David Greer. Fascinating individual, David Greer. I'm really happy to welcome to Unreal Bluegrass David Greer. How are you, David?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Listen, I have really enjoyed, got an advanced copy of Ways of the World, your new album, which will be released, I think, in March. And
yeah, the end of March it comes out, sure enough.
It's a great album. It's on, do I have the label correct? Is Dreadnought?
Dreadnought Recordings.
Yeah,
that's my label.
Good. Oh, good for you. David, this album is so, I've listened and listened. Every day or so I have a new favorite. I will tell you, going into this discussion, my favorite now happens to be the last cut on the album, Let's Think Why.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just, there's so many great tunes. But today, tomorrow it might change, but today that might be my favorite cut. You have so many great guests on this album with you, so many great musicians. Nobody could say anything better about this than what Tommy Emmanuel says on the back of the album.
Yeah, he wrote some really nice liner notes, didn't he?
Oh, man, it's just, when Tommy Emmanuel says all the things that he says about it, I know what you're playing is very difficult, but you make it sound easy. He talks about the great tone and everything and all the collaborations and all the people you brought in. That's all you need to say about how good the album is.
Yeah, I was really happy with those notes. I'm glad he liked it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, if Tommy says it's good, thumbs up, then everybody needs to know. I've seen you before, David, and here's the thing that always struck me about your play is so, as I watch and listen, your play is so, it seems effortless, but then I realize what you are so economical and efficient, and your playing is so clean. I'm sure guitar players watch you, just like Tommy would listen, and recognize that what you're doing is you seem to be so compact and so efficient. The only term I can think of is economical on the fretboard. Is that something that you aspire to do? Is it something that you're looking to achieve as you're playing?
Well, it seems to me when it's happening that I'm working like a dog.
Well, you hide it well. You hide
but
it well.
I've heard people say that. So I think, you know, what you're seeing is what I see when I, you know, I've hired different people to work around the house. There's one time I had this old electrician, and just the way he had a just a regular screwdriver, not a cordless electric deal, just a screwdriver, and the way he worked that screwdriver was like it was an art, you know. And then he had his apprentice, some young kid 18 years old, fumbling around with that screwdriver, you know. And just the difference in something that easy, the artistry and the years put behind it, you know, was really cool to watch.
Well,
plus, I'm really good at watching people work.
Well,
so much good at working. But and it was really cool to see, you know, just the artistry this old feller had. It was great. And so maybe, I don't know if I could put myself in that same kind of category.
I,
but
I
I've
am.
Been,
I am. I'm
I've
putting
been
you
playing
there.
For 30, 50-some years.
Right.
52 years in September. So maybe, you know, through all that time, finally something's starting to sink in, I guess, maybe.
We're going to talk about much that's on the album. It's a great album. It's a nice long album, too, over 52 minutes. So some of these tunes are really explored in detail. But again, within that structure that you use, and there's three or four tunes in here that would be fit on any jazz album that you just wanted. If you just wanted to release a jazz album, there's several on here that are, and especially the last one. And you even have a trumpet player on here. One of them that is just a gorgeous. There are gorgeous tunes on here. There's upbeat tunes. There's a couple bluegrassy tunes. Let me ask you this though, before we get started into those things. And I don't mean to take up your entire day, but what do you listen to?
You know, I just listen to the radio mostly. And at the house, I rarely listen to anything in the house. I mean, I got a stereo. I got a ton of CDs and records, but seems like, you know, I'll listen to something in the car, but mostly it's the radio. If I do end up carrying a few CDs out, it's, I don't know, Wes Montgomery or Joe Pass.
Oh, man.
You know, or Shelby Lynn. There's this record of hers called I Am Shelby Lynn that's amazing. And so, you know, just stuff that I can't do is what I like to listen to.
Did anybody play chords cleaner? And Joe Pass, to me, Wes Montgomery, amazing, innovative, and I love Wes. I have a jazz radio show, and I love this stuff. But Joe Pass, to me, is what you might be in the acoustic guitar or the bluegrass. He's like the ultimate of, you're talking about you can't do it. I listened to him. He had all these albums out, solo albums, and they're just incredible. And you think, this is one guy, carries everything, fills all the space that needs to be spaced. And his the chords and the stuff that he played was just, I don't know. I think Joe, you mentioned Joe Pass. I think he might be my favorite jazz guitarist of all time.
He's amazing. I got lucky. The very first one I bought of his is called Joy Spring. Have you heard that
one?
I
don't have that.
Oh, my gosh. It's live. It's in a studio. It's like a three or four piece. But it's amazing. It's so good. And then my friend says, oh, no, Dave, you got to get the solo Joe Pass, because he knew I play a lot of solo shows. He said, you should get the solo Joe Pass. You'll really love it. And so I did. And I found myself not paying attention. And it's because I didn't know the tunes. I couldn't tell when he was just playing something.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Basic, or when he was going off and doing something really cool. It was all just really cool, but I didn't have the knowledge of the tune to be able to use that against what he was doing. And it scared me. I thought, well, geez, this is what happens when people come to my shows. You know, they just start dozing off because they can't. So I had to pay attention. I really paid attention to that.
Did you ever see him live?
No.
He used to come out, and he looked like, this is not my description, I'm stealing this from a newspaper writer, I think, here locally. It was like the cab driver came in with a little, he had a little amp, and he always had that little jacket and like a little, one of those little hats on.
Yeah.
And you think, if you didn't know, you would know who it was. And he sat down, and when he was doing his solo thing, which was a big part of the last end of his career, he just had this little, he came out with his little amp and sat it down, and then boom, it was just gold, absolute gold.
Yeah, he's great.
Listen, I do count several songs on here. Like I said, you have a trumpet player. Most of these musicians I've at least have a passing knowledge of. I don't have any idea right away who read, or Rod McGahey, I'll pronounce it, probably butcher his name, but trumpet player on.
Rod McGahey, he plays the trumpet, and he's a photographer and a trumpet player here in town in Nashville. And he's got a few different records out. He's got at least one on Compass Records, which you'll know is Allison Brown's label.
Right.
And his tone is just so warm. He's got the warmest tone. It's so good. And so, you know, I wanted something different. You know, I didn't think a 5-string banjo would be as nice as what I was looking for that tune. And so we reached out to him, and he was available. So
You hit a beautiful, it's a beautiful song, a beautiful, beautiful tune. And his tone is, like you said, is very, very warm. And just that's one that I immediately pull off as, I'm not trying to classify these things, but I'm listening to the album, and you go from the Curmudgeon's Gate, which is a much more up-tempo instrumental, Dust Bowl Dream with Tim O'Brien. And then you slide right into Farewell to Red Boots with Rod and his trumpet, and they just think, well, this is like it's a whole different album or a different sound or something. And but then you come back to those things again later with the last cut on the album, and also I'll say Everybody Loves Crazy Till Crazy Loves You.
Yeah.
I also put in that same vein, just gorgeous chords and changes as you go throughout. And I wonder this, David, if you, how long does it take you to put together the arrangement of the songs, the order they're going to be in, and who you're going to bring in, as Tommy Emmanuel mentions in his notes, the collaborators you bring in. How does that work in a musician's mind?
Well, just about all of these songs were written in the moment, you know, whenever that moment was. For example, Farewell to Red Boots happened like 30 years ago. I think I was in England when I wrote it, and it just popped out. It's like, oh, cool, here's a song. And I've never recorded it until just now. I mean, I've played it on live shows. People have, you know, bootlegs of me playing it somewhere, but this is the first I've ever recorded it on a recording, you know, and so I've had it all that time. It hadn't really changed. The ending was always the way I play it. Everything's just the way I always did it. I just finally recorded it. Let's see, the song Dead Flowers, I got in the studio and realized I didn't know who was starting it. So I asked around, who wants to kick this off? And it was just like really silent. I said, all right, then I'll kick it off. And I did it just like a real old-time, just basic guitar kickoff. You know, Ways of the World, the first song on the record. I overdubbed the intro and the solo. So I'm there, and Brent, the engineer, co-produced it with me. He says, you know what you're going to do? I said, no, just hit the button. We'll do it. And then, so that intro is the first thing I ever, you know, I've never even thought of an intro for that song. Of course, everybody knows it needs one, so we put one on there, but I had no idea. And that's just what popped out in the moment. And we did another one, but it was different and not as good. And so I said, you know, this ain't perfect. I like it. Let's do that. Use the first one.
The first cut you're talking about is title cut, Ways of the World. You're joined by Andrea Zahn, some really nice
vocal. Yeah, boy, she's great.
Yeah. And the song is about kind of almost the way you're describing your approach to recording. It's kind of like go with it, go with the flow. I might be stealing some lyrics, but and I'm not saying that you do it at all costs, like you can never go back and redo it, but what you're telling me now about how you record some of these kind of fits into that. Maybe that's why you named the album The Ways of the World. I don't know.
Well, you know, I have to hear myself play all the time. I hear it more than anyone else. So I get bored easily. And I figure if I'm bored, everybody else is going to be bored listening to it. So I try to do something that keeps my interest level, you know, present instead of daydreaming. And so that's how I do things.
So you got a show Wednesday night, you got a show Thursday night, you got a show. Does each time you might play the same set list or a similar set list? Do you start them off how you feel at the moment?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's always different. There's a lot of things that are alike. I mean, the melody is still the melody, but the way I approach it and the way, you know, I interact with the song is different each time.
Yeah. That's a beautiful song, the title cut. Curmudgeon's Gates is a really up-tempo instrumental.
Yeah, it's like a banjo or fiddle tune, how I hear it.
Yeah. And then you follow that with Dust Bowl Dream with Tim O'Brien, which is, I think, is about maybe the what we would call the Dust Bowl days, but really it's kind of relevant to, the lyrics are kind of relevant to life in general. I don't think you're writing just about, you know, when all the land blew away from out in Oklahoma and everything. I maybe you were, but it seems to be applicable to a lot of different things that happen every day.
That song happened as a result of a bet at a bar. There's four of us, and one of them said, let's meet here in a month and see who's written the best song, and the winner gets free drinks. I said, all right. I said, but it shouldn't take a month. You know, let's meet here next week and see who has the best song. So, and I had no intention, you know, of writing a song. I just figured I'd buy a friend some drinks. But I wrote this melody. And then I was sitting at the airport waiting for a plane. It's like 5:30 in the morning. I remembered. It's like, well, maybe I need to write some lyrics to this song. And so I thought, well, it's a lonesome melody. What's a lonesome subject? I said, well, the Dust Bowl's pretty lonesome.
Yes, sir.
And so I wrote it right there at the airport. And I wrote it was complete in about 15 minutes, the words. And I liked the first verse. I liked the chorus. I liked the second verse. And I finally get to the hotel later that afternoon, and I start playing it. I didn't like the last verse, so I changed it, and it was worse. And I changed it again, it was even worse. So I decided, if you don't, I'll just go back to the first incarnation of the second verse, you know. And if you just don't sing it, and you do it like Bill Anderson would do it, and you just talk your way through it, then it works so much better. And it was just like, oh, this is just what it needed.
Well, I have to ask you, who won the bet?
I did. No one else wrote a tune.
Okay, all right.
They were going to do the way I was going to.
When you tell the story in the future, don't answer that second question about nobody else wrote a tune. Just say you won, and then leave it at that. It's a good story.
That's pretty funny.
Right after that is She's Gone, which is, I mean, well, we've already talked about Farewell to Red Boots, which is just gorgeous. She's Gone is certainly, in my mind, a bluegrass tune. You have Shad Cobb, Mike Compton joining you on vocals on that. But you know what? When I about halfway through this song, and it's about a woman leaving a guy, so I mean it's right there in that, you know, that sad. But about halfway through this song, I'm thinking the singer isn't that upset that this person is leaving. Is that just something that it's kind of upbeat, kind of up tempo, and yeah, she's leaving, and the last thing she said was this and this. But I don't feel like the singer is all tore up about this.
Not too bad. And, you know, the chorus, the first chorus is just a duet with Shad and I. But the second chorus is a trio with Mike coming in on the baritone, Mike Compton. Mm-hmm. But that, the last chorus is repeat. I think it goes through three times. And it goes from the minor the first time, then to a major. The second time.
Okay.
So that makes it sound a little more happy than the minor's kind of sad just inherently, but maybe that's it. But
well,
yeah, I like it.
It's good.
I like the solos in the middle. It sounds like a old Western, that one guitar solo to me.
Yeah,
sounds
it does.
Like
it does.
Kind of cool.
The and this is the Everybody Loves Crazy Till Crazy Loves You. That's a nice... Well, it's over 5 minutes, but just that's one of those great. This is a jazz. This is clearly. I didn't know about Joe Pass and Wes Montgomery, your inclinations, but I was kind of guessing towards those influences. But this is another tune that's just it's just a gorgeous melody and played very well, and I love listening to it.
I wrote one of those. I think I don't know which one, the first or second one. On Shad Cobb's front porch, we were sitting there picking. We picked for an hour or so, and. Took a break, and this one popped out. And then we picked again. I played it for like 10 or 15 minutes, kind of burned it into memory a little bit. Then Shad and I played for another half hour, and I started playing that song again. Then another part came out. I thought, okay, that's enough parts. I'm done. And so it just happens. I happen to be sitting behind the guitar, and one pops out. You know, so... And the ones I work at and strive to make good, I don't like those. And I'm not sure if it's just because they feel or I think they're contrived or if I'm just that lazy and I don't want to work at it. But I really do like the ones that just pop out. They seem like they're meant to be. It's like, well, of course, I'm just here, but this is how this song goes without any interference. From me or ability or lack of ability or whatever that could get in the way, when it pops out, it's there. It's pretty much done.
You're a channel. At that point, you're really just a channel you're an open channel for what you're hearing and playing and it's coming. I that's the way I would explain it. Not that I've ever had that experience, but I think you enjoy, I think what you're telling me is you enjoy those better, for the moments that work, and that's what I think you're telling me that happened with that medley. It's a medley, by the way. I didn't put the slash in there, but it's a medley of two different tunes. They just happen to both have Crazy in the title. Everybody Loves Crazy and Slash, Till Crazy Loves You, and that's the sixth cut. Billy in the Low Ground right after that is a tune most people are familiar with. You also touch up a little bit Salt Creek and then Crossing Salt Creek. Just kind of put your own touch on those arrangements.
Yeah, well, the Billy in the Low Ground goes from C... to E flat, and so that's the only And then I just play through it,
yeah.
You know, a bunch of different ways, back and forth between those two chords. And the Salt Creek and Crossing Salt Creek, well, that is completely different. I ended up making up the first one by changing the chords in weird spots. It's still square. There's four beats to a bar, but the chords change in weird spots that you're not quite used to as a player. And plus, knowing the tune fights against you, you know, because you're just drawn to play it the way it's supposed to go, the way you've played it a million times. But, you know, it's a little different.
And then again, I like the fact that so many albums that come to me, if there's a five-minute tune, that's a long one. Well, that's 7 minutes and 16 seconds, the last one.
It goes on a bit.
It does, which is good, because and then it allows you to stretch out, and it's a medley, of course, but it allows you to stretch out, just like Let's Think Why, which is, as I said, my current favorite, so I don't want to go there just yet. Dead Flowers, you mentioned earlier with Shad, that's kind of has like a swing. Am I hearing like a swing influence in some of the fiddle?
A little bit, yeah. That's Stuart Duncan playing the fiddle, and Shed singing with me, and that's a song that Ashley Caudill and I wrote. I had the chorus written, golly, 30 years ago, sure enough, and never did anything with it. And I got to be friends with a songwriter here in town, Ashley, and said, well, you know, I got this song I never finished, and, well, what do you got? And I played it for her, said, you want to help me finish it? I'd like to. So, okay, great, let's do it. And we got together three times, and then there you are. Song's done. You know what else about that song is Jim Hurst cut that song.
Really?
He cut it before I did. Hang on, I'm going to go in this room and figure out what album it's on of his,
okay.
And tell you.
I've probably got it in my library, but you go first. You're right there.
It's called Looking Glass.
Yeah.
It's kind of green.
Yes.
That's it.
All right.
It's the number six cut on there that I wrote with Ashley called Dead Flowers. Yeah. So you can play that one, too. Play them both back to back.
I might do that. The Waiting on Daddy's Money is another instrumental that I think is, well, to me, the changes throughout that seems to be more of a jazz feel. And again, I don't
know.
You know what I mean?
That's funny. I hear it as an old-time fiddle tune,
well,
old-time fiddle, old-time banjo. So I played it for my old-time friends. I said, hey, man, I think I've written an old-time tune you're going to love. And I played it, and they say, oh, Dave, because that's my name. You know, they say, that's not old-time. I said, really, what is it? So they go, it's jazz.
Oh.
I said, look, just because you can't play it doesn't mean it's jazz. But it's funny. Now you're saying it's jazz. Well, I don't know. It's got an arrangement to it, that's for sure. But I hear it just like an old-time screechy fiddle tune is how I envision it in my head.
Listen, man, I'll give it another listen through that perspective. That just was my first, you know, listen for the last couple of days since I've had it.
How you hear it's how you hear it.
All
there's
right.
Nothing wrong.
All right.
Well,
she came from the mountains. You get an assist from Mara O'Connell, who.
Oh yeah.
You know, if she comes within 100 miles, I'll go see Mara O'Connell wherever she.
Oh,
is.
She's a doll. And I had that song. You know where that one came from?
What?
Was a million years ago. There was a book called Bridges of Madison County. You've heard of that?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, somewhere towards the end of that book, the author is describing how this character goes into a bar and hears this saxophone player playing a solo original saxophone jazz ballad. And he's playing it, and he goes on to describe it. It's pages long, as I recall. And just the way he describes it was so cool, without actually telling you how the tune goes. But the feeling behind it, and the colors, and the way the shadows played on the walls, blah, blah, blah. I thought, well, man, I wonder how that tune goes. And I thought, well, I'll write one. And of course it does. It's not jazzy. It wouldn't
this
be.
This is the most Irish tune on the album.
Exactly. It is completely Irish. But I know it is. And it's not a jazz tune at all, but that's how I start. That's how it came out.
Okay.
That's what I was trying to do. and it just came out that way. And the timing is of it is weird. It's one part that repeats and repeats, just keeps going over that one part, but it like changes, and there's cool stuff that happens. Then there's the vocal part in the middle, but let's see, it goes five, it's like one, two, three, four, five, one, two, three, four, five, then six, two times of six, and then it repeats. So it's not four, four, it's five, four, five, four, then three, four. Four.
You have so many. We talked about Mara. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but there's so many great guests on this album. It's just, I do not know Dennis Crouch. I didn't know Rod.
Oh, Dennis. Let me tell you about Dennis.
All right.
Dennis, I just played a show with him last night. He is amazing. He's an amazing bass player. You do know of him because he played with the Nashville Bluegrass Band.
Okay.
Since then, he's done a bunch of sessions, and he's been playing with Diana Krall, amazing piano player.
Yeah,
Dennis is the real deal.
Okay.
And he's listening. He listens. I love playing with Dennis. You do something, and he's right there with you. It's so cool. There's several times on this record where I do something, and Dennis does something at the same time without any prior knowledge. You know, no talking about it. It's just, okay, here's this spot, I'm going to do something rhythmic. And Dennis does something, too. It's like, oh, that's so cool. I love those moments.
Well, maybe, I'm sure that I do. You mentioned those names, because I'm fans of both of those artists that you mentioned. So I do know. I just didn't know his name. The last cut on this album, Dave, is as I listened to the last couple of days, my favorite changes, not that I have to have a favorite, but at the moment that we started this conversation, the last cut, Let's Think Why, is currently my favorite. It's a gorgeous instrumental. And
there's a lot of space
favorite.
In that one, too.
Yeah, which is okay.
Yeah.
It's okay. So it's not always what you play, it's what you don't play. How many people have said that?
Stuart Duncan's fiddle solo in the middle is amazing. And Jeff Taylor's piano solo on there is just perfection. It's great. And I get to go crazy on it in a way that, you know, I don't often get to do. So it was fine. It was really cool to do. I love playing something that makes me think differently than a fiddle tune might, you know, not just straight eighth notes or hot licks or whatever. Just try and stay in this vibe you got going and play something you've never played before. And it's, you know, all these songs. Well, not all, but most of these songs, I had no idea what I was going to play. I knew the melody, and then after that, had no idea.
Is that the real creative point? I don't mean to be too deep about this, but when you have all the skill and everything you've amassed and all the talent, is that the real edge that you want to be on as far as the creation? It's the moment. It's in the moment.
Well, I don't know. There's plus and minuses, I guess, if you're not in practice.
I think you're in practice when you get there.
I'm pretty good.
So when you get to that point, help me out here, man. I wouldn't want to be on that edge. But when you are, isn't that really where everything comes together, or hopefully does?
Yeah. And, you know, you take all you've learned, and it all boils down. It comes out as a guitar solo, or even in your rhythm. It's all your personality coming out through the instrument is what you want. That's what I've always wanted. All of my favorite musicians are instantly recognizable just from the first few notes.
Right.
Vassar Clements,
yeah.
Clarence White, Tony Rice, Doc Watson, all these people. I mean, as soon as you hear them, James Burton on electric guitar, as soon as you hear it, it's like, oh my gosh, I know exactly who that is. And I always wanted that, too, as a kid. I mean, I started playing guitar when I was about six. And I've always been around music in one way or another. And, you know, that was, I always wanted a record because all these people had records. And I always wanted to somehow have a recognizable sound. And,
I think you've done it. I mean, let me ask you this. Have you... other albums that you've been under your name, have you? How many? I don't know. For some reason, I don't have any. But have you released Dave Greer as the as a solo artist, so to speak, even though, but
yeah,
okay,
I've got many records. Right. This, let's see, I'm gonna try to get there. Is my 15th record.
Okay.
I started my own record label in I don't know, in 98. And this is the sixth. This Ways of the World that comes out at the end of March will be the sixth record on my label. The first one is called Hootenanny, and that's with Tim O'Brien and Dirk Powell. And that's a bunch of, like, old-timey pieces, and some I've written in that flavor, that vein. The next one's called I've Got the House to Myself. That's a solo record, and that's done really well. Then Live at the Linda, it's another solo live show that was at the Linda Norris Auditorium in Albany, New York. Then Evocative, which I played electric guitar on. I wrote all the tunes on that. After that's one called Fly on the Wall, which is Dirk Powell and James Leva. It's another old-time recording. Then The Ways of the World.
Are these all on Dreadnought? Your label?
They are.
Okay,
every one of those.
So if somebody goes to, you have a website.
I do. It's davidgreer.com, and it's new. I just got a brand new website.
Good.
So we're messing with it and trying to work the kinks out of it. I think we got it.
Yes.
It's just davidgreer.com. There's all sorts of stuff. Every CD I've...
Oh, okay, good. They can find these things you're mentioning to me. They can find access, get access to those things.
They're all right there.
That's cool, man. All right. And then they'll find out. They'll also be able to find where you're playing.
Well, yeah, I don't often put where I'm playing on there.
Okay.
You know, but yeah, when I do, they'll be able to see it.
Okay, Dave Greer, I really love this album, man. The Ways of the World. This is just killing me, and I've hit it. I guess maybe Saturday I got an advanced copy. And I've been driving around. That's what I do anymore. I drive around listening to music that comes into me, so I can really get a feel for it. And I just love it. I just let it play, and it repeats and repeats, and all these
tunes. I'm excited, too. Oh. I'm a little scared of it. This is the first of my records that I've ever sang on. So that's a little daunting, but and it's really scary because bluegrass music has some great singers. Del McCurry, Lester Flatt, Bill Monroe, you know, Ricky Skaggs, Keith Whitley. It goes on and on. Tim O'Brien.
Yeah, Tim.
There's so many good singers, but I figure if Bob Dylan can sing, how hard could it be?
I think that's a perfect analogy. And I didn't say anything about your singing. It wasn't because I wasn't interested in it, but other things. But, yeah, you do sing a lot, and you sing fine. Like you said, if Bob Dylan can sing. How hard can
you know, hopefully, you know, it's all personality anyway, so hopefully they'll get, you know, as long as like you're somewhere near pitch and you can understand the word, I figure it's good enough.
It's good enough. Dave Greer, man, thanks so much for taking your time to chat with me a bit, and I'm glad that we did. Now I can go find some other things that you've done that have just passed me by, but I know where to look for Dreadnought, and it's a great album. I wish you the absolute best with it, and I think you're going to get some nice responses to it when it hits.
You know what? It's available for pre-order, too, if anybody out there would like to order it now, and you'll get it at the end of March. You'll forget about it. By then, it'd be just like getting a present in the mail. That's what you should do. Just go to my website and pre-order this record. Give yourself a present. You've earned it. You worked hard.
And you'll be surprised when you get your mail. You think, oh, what's this?
That's right. Now, I don't know if this is true or not, but I've heard... If you don't buy a CD, then the terrorists win. Now, you wouldn't want that to happen, so you need to do your part.
I think you're absolutely right. And on that deep state thought, I'm going to let you go, Dave. I appreciate your time, man. And I you can pre-order it. It's on the website, and it's easy to do. And then you can just, like you said, forget about it and check your mailbox and be surprised.
Oh, I got a new Facebook page.
Okay.
I've never had a Facebook page before.
Well, then it's not new if you've never had one.
Well, this is brand new to me.
Okay.
So, check that out.
All right.
There'll be all sorts of stuff on there. It's called David Greer Music, I think.
All right, then. All right.
Yeah.
Well, listen, buddy, thanks so much. I've enjoyed your playing. I've seen you live, and I'm thrilled to get this album, get the opportunity to chat with you for a minute, and I hope that hope we covered what was useful for you to talk about.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I hope so.
Okay. David Greer, I'll let you go, man. I'll see you down the road.
Take care now.
See you, bye.
Bye-bye.